Believe it or not, you guys, summer is right around the corner, which for a lot of us means warmer weather, more outdoor activities, spending more time in the sun, and also more ways that we can be left feeling dehydrated. Summer requires extraordinary hydration that's built for everyday dehydrating moments. But luckily, Liquid IV hydrates you with the benefits like electrolytes, essential vitamins, and clinically tested nutrients. Liquid IV has 3 times the electrolytes than the leading sports drink, plus 8 vitamins and nutrients in a single stick, so it really is no question why Liquid IV is the number one powdered hydration brand in America. Liquid IV makes it simple. You just tear open the stick, pour it into your water, and enjoy your packet of Liquid IV. Liquid IV is my go-to when I want a little pick-me-up and when I feel like my body needs a little bit extra hydration. Drinking regular water day in and day out can get boring, and Liquid IV makes hydrating a more fun and enjoyable experience. Whether you're on the go traveling this summer or laying by the beach, finishing a workout, or just need an extra boost after a fun night, Liquid IV has got you covered. Tear, pour, and live more. One stick and 16 ounces of water hydrates you better than water alone. And now, Liquid IV has sugar-free flavors too. Whether you want white peach, raspberry melon, lemon lime, or my personal favorite, green grape, you are sure to find something that you love. Turn your ordinary water into an extraordinary hydration with Liquid IV. Get 20% off your first order of Liquid IV when you go to liquidiv.com and use code KILLER at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code KILLER at liquidiv.com. Hello everyone, what is up? Welcome back to another episode of Killer Instinct, you guys. Thank you so much for joining me here today. If you're new here, hi, my name is Savannah and I'm your host of Killer Instinct. Before we get started, make sure you go ahead and hit that subscribe button, that way you never miss an episode. We post weekly here on the podcast every single Wednesday and you are not going to want to miss it. Now, you guys, as you can tell by the title of today's episode, today we are talking about the Broken Arrow murders. As I mentioned to you last week, for the month of May, we are dedicating the true crime category to family annihilators, and there truly was no way that we could get through this month without talking about this case. I will say, however, even though I did have the mindset of this was an important case to talk about during the month of May, there was a part of me that was hesitant to talk about this case, and that was because I did not want to feed into the motive that our killers today had. I did not want to give them what they wanted, the reason that they did this, the reason that they did what they did, which was for notoriety, for fame, for people to talk about what they did. I did not want to talk about this episode today for that reason. But after doing more thinking, I realized that the real importance here is to talk about our victims. It's to focus on them. It's to talk about what happened to the Bever family. And it isn't about feeding into the motive of our killers, but it's really about highlighting our victims instead. So that for me was really important just to put out there when talking about this case today, because I did not want to and do not want to feed into the narrative and the motive that they had. And you will see why as we continue talking about this case. But today we are talking about the Bever family, also known as the Broken Arrow murders. So let's break down the Bever family. You had the father, David Dennis Bever. You also had the mother, April Bever, and their 7 children. That would be 18-year-old Robert, 16-year-old Michael, 13-year-old Crystal, 12-year-old Daniel, 10-year-old Christopher, 5-year-old Victoria, and 2-year-old Autumn at the time of these murders. Now, the Bever family was living in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma, and Broken Arrow is known to be a very quaint, family-oriented community. It's a very religious community. It's also a very safe community. Police said that before the Broken Arrow killings, the homicide rate was almost non-existent in this town. Now, the Bever family lived in a very beautiful, large home in Broken Arrow. David worked as a computer analyst artist and a programmer, mainly working outside of the home, but he did have a home office, so he would sometimes spend time working there instead. Now, April was a stay-at-home mom who also did some odd jobs, but mainly they were remote, so that way she could spend as much time with her children as possible. Now, along with some of the odd jobs that she had, as well as the job of being a stay-at-home mother, April was also the teacher to her children. All of the Bever children were homeschooled. This was something that was really important for April and David, and April was the one who taught them everything that they needed to know. Now, something else that April spent her time doing is she really found a sense of community online, specifically in Reddit. She would go on Reddit and talk about stories about her family. She would also give advice to other parents who were reaching out looking for guidance, and this was a way for her to really connect with the outside world. In January 2015, she wrote, quote, "I have 7 children and we have always lived on one income and never had any government assistance or needed it. My kids do not go without. These are childless people who do not have this. Life is about making good job or good income choices and then making the best money choices based on your income. I will never give up having any of my children so I could have more money. They are amazing people and the world will benefit by having them in it. And nothing I could buy or invest in could compare to giving a person a chance to have a life." End quote. Now, all in all, people who knew the Bever family remembered them as being very quiet. They kept to themselves. Some described them as even being a tad standoffish, but Broken Arrow was a community where everyone in it was very friendly. So if you did not fit that mold, you would stand out quite a bit. And that was the Bever family. They weren't mean by any stretch of the imagination. They never bothered anyone. Their neighbors actually said that they were the perfect neighbors because of this. However, they did just keep to themselves more. The Bevers were very religious. They were active in their church. They were said to be very tight-knit. They were very close, and they did everything together. Now, out of all of the children, all of the Bever siblings, the two children that were said to be the closest were 18-year-old Robert and 16-year-old Michael. So these would be the two eldest Bever children. Now, Robert was very much your typical 18-year-old boy. At least that is what everyone thought on the outside. He did seem to be a little socially awkward, but that was about it. He enjoyed playing video games. He was really into computers. He had even posted 2 YouTube videos online about Minecraft. It was something that he really loved doing and he loved to play. He watched his parents growing up being very invested in computers. His dad worked in tech, so he also shared that same interest. Now, Michael, who was the second oldest, really looked up to his older brother, Robert. Michael was definitely the more submissive out of the two. Michael just wanted to do whatever it took to make Robert happy. He really idolized his older brother. They spent a lot of time together, staying up late. They shared a room, so it was easy for them to stay up late and talk about their future and what they wanted their lives to look like. And the two really became best friends. And all of the Bever children were very close. Like I said, they did quite literally everything together. Everything was a family activity. But Robert and Michael definitely had this undeniable bond. Now, as I mentioned, all of the Bever children were homeschooled. And a big reason for this was because April and David were very protective of their kids and were very worried about the outside world infiltrating and having access to their children. But one thing that April and David forgot about, or at least just didn't take as much into account for, was their kids having access to the outside world. All of the Bever children had unlimited screen time, they had iPads, they had computers, and they really weren't being monitored very heavily, if even at all. So the kids really had free rein to do what they wished when they they were online. And with this, the kids definitely had access to the darker side of the internet. Robert and Michael spent a lot of time looking on this dark side of the internet. They spent a lot of time looking at serial killers, mass shooters, school shooters. Specifically, they spent time learning about Charles Manson, the Columbine school shooting, and this was something that they were both very, very fascinated with. Robert also watched a movie called The Rampage, and the plot of the movie is that there is a man who goes on a killing spree, stabbing and shooting people. And in the movie, the man talks about cleaning the world by getting rid of some of the population. And Robert became hyperfixated on this movie, and that hyperfixation grew into an obsession. And Robert felt that he wanted to do the same thing. And that is where the idea of going on a killing spree really started. Robert and Michael decided that they were going to embark on a killing spree with the hopes of murdering as many people as possible. Robert and Michael talked at length how they wanted to be famous or infamous for their kills, and that was the goal. That was their motive. They wanted people to talk about them. They wanted to be known in the same category as some of the worst killers in the world. Now, in the summer of 2014 is where the plan for the murder spree really began. Robert was working for a company at the time called Micatech, and Micatech is a religious call center. People would call in and Robert would answer the phone and he would listen to whatever was going on in their lives, and he would either pray for them or with them while they were on the phone. And while he was doing this, while he had this job, he was taking the money that he was earning from this job and going and buying different equipment to help aid them in this murder spree. They were buying body shields, helmets, multiple knives, ammunition, different guns. And this is when Robert started writing in his journal about his plan with Michael and everything that they were going to need in order to fulfill their kill spree. Robert talked about the different weapons that they were going to need, which were the guns and the knives. He also went into detail about exactly what he planned on doing. In his notes, Robert claimed that the plan was to murder over 500 people. And as I previously mentioned, the motive here was the notoriety. Robert wanted to be famous, and he figured that this was the way that he wanted to do it. Now, in the beginning stages of planning this kill spree, Robert really was the one who was the driving force here. This was something that he was planning on his own. It was the money that he was making from his job to go and buy all of the different equipment that he was needing. He really was the driving force and the leader in this plan. However, Robert did let Michael know about what he was planning on doing. He confided in Michael about what his plan was and asked Michael if Michael would want to join. And Michael very quickly said yes. And this made Robert very excited. He was very excited to have a partner. He was very excited that Michael, who was his best friend and his brother, they were going to be able to carry this out together. Robert really was thrilled when he saw how excited Michael also was about this. Now, as I mentioned, over time leading up to the kills, the boys did start collecting different equipment like knives and helmets and body armor and all of the things that they were going to need. And their 13-year-old sister, Crystal, started to notice their behavior, started to notice this dark path that they were going on. And she was really getting uncomfortable with the fact that her brothers were beginning this collection. And she did raise concern to her parents. She went to April and she went to David and she expressed her concern. But David and April did not share the same concern that Crystal did. David did think that the boys spending their money on all of these things, all of this equipment, was useless and that these weren't necessary items. So he was frustrated with that fact. However, when it came to the actual fact of the matter of this is what they were doing, this is what Robert and Michael were doing, this is what they were collecting, it was making Crystal uncomfortable. The behavior was starting to get a little bit unsettling. April and David really chalked their behavior up to a boys will be boys mindset. That's basically what they told Crystal, told her not to worry. Robert and Michael are just teenage boys. This is what they do. It's no big deal. And this really was the last conversation that they had about it. April and David didn't seem worried, told Crystal not to be worried, really brushed it off to the boys will be boys mindset. However, unfortunately, they were very, very wrong. So this leads us up to 11:30 p.m. on July 22nd, 2015, when the Broken Arrow dispatch received a 911 call from 12-year-old Daniel Bever, who said that his brothers were attacking their family. On the call, you can hear screaming in the background. There's a lot of chaos happening in the back before ultimately the call went dead. Now, police immediately responded to the call and arrived to the home that was on 709 Magnolia Court. And before even entering the home, police could tell that this was about to be a very bloody scene. There was blood on the sidewalk. There was blood on the walkway leading up to the front door. And when they got closer to that door, police could hear a faint sound of someone saying, "Help me," coming from inside. Now, at first, police didn't know how they were going to execute getting into the home, if they were going to be strategic about it, if they were going to wait for backup. But once they heard the words, "Help me," police knew that they could not wait any longer, and they kicked down the front door. Upon doing so is when they saw 13-year-old Crystal lying on the floor, clearly injured. Believe it or not, you guys, summer is right around the corner, which for a lot of us means warmer weather, more outdoor activities, spending more time in the sun, and also more ways that we can be left feeling dehydrated. Summer requires extraordinary hydration that's built for everyday dehydrating moments, but luckily, Liquid IV hydrates you with the benefits like electrolytes, essential vitamins, and clinically tested nutrients. Liquid IV has 3 times the electrolytes than the leading sports drink, plus 8 vitamins and nutrients in a single stick, so it really is no question why Liquid IV is the number one powdered hydration brand in America. Liquid IV makes it simple. You just tear open the stick, pour it into your water, and enjoy your packet of Liquid IV. Liquid IV is my go-to when I want a little pick-me-up and when I feel like my body needs a little bit extra hydration. Drinking regular water day in and day out can get boring, and Liquid IV makes hydrating a more fun and enjoyable experience. Whether you're on the go traveling this summer or laying by the beach, finishing a workout, or just need an extra boost after a fun night, Liquid IV has got you covered. Tear, pour, and live more. One stick and 16 ounces of water hydrates you better than water alone. And now, Liquid IV has sugar-free flavors too. Whether you want white peach, raspberry melon, lemon lime, or my personal favorite, green grape, you are sure to find something that you love. Turn your ordinary water into an extraordinary hydration with Liquid IV. Get 20% off your first order of Liquid IV when you go to liquidiv.com and use code KILLER at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code KILLER at liquidiv.com. Imagine an app designed to make you use it less. Seems a little counterproductive, right? Well, Apartments.com's instant alert feature works exactly that way. Instead of scanning rental listings a million times a day, simply set and forget your search to whatever you're looking for in a place and let Apartments.com do the rest. From pet-friendly apartments to balconies to in-unit ACs, Apartments.com's powerful search tools let you know when the perfect combination of features you're seeking is listed. So you don't have to power through rental descriptions one by one. With more rental listings than anywhere else, Apartments.com's instant alerts mean that you can spend less time looking for the perfect place and more time on just doing you. Apartments.com, the place to find a place. When police got closer to Crystal, she told them that her brothers, Robert and Michael Bever, had attacked her and her family. Now, when police were listening to Crystal, they could tell that she had blood in her lungs. She was covering her throat. Police immediately picked her up and ran her out to the paramedics where an ambulance was, left her there, and then turned back around and continued going back inside of the home. Now, police continued throughout the house, going room by room. The first room they went into, they saw April and Daniel lying on the floor, dead from their injuries. Daniel had suffered from 21 stab wounds to the back, shoulder, and his chest. April was also killed by blunt force trauma and had more than 48 wounds to her head, torso, neck, and arms. Police continued searching through the home, and that is when they came across David. David was laying on the ground ground, also dead from his injuries. He suffered from 28 stab wounds to the chest, face, neck, and his left arm. Now, police continued walking and they came across the hallway bathroom. Now, the door to this bathroom was actually closed and locked, so police began knocking on it before ultimately they kicked down the door. And when they did, police described this as the worst thing that they had ever seen in their career. Behind the door was 10-year-old Christopher and 5-year-old Victoria. Both had been stabbed to death. Christopher was stabbed 21 times and Victoria was stabbed 23 times. To see such violence that was inflicted on innocent children was beyond heartbreaking, but police knew that they had to keep going to see if there were any more victims or to find their suspects. Police continued canvassing the home and ultimately they came across 2-year-old Autumn's room, and to everyone's surprise, Autumn had been spared from the brutal scene. She was alive in her crib, she had been untouched, and police immediately picked her up and ran her outside as well. Now at this point, police searched the remainder of the house and discovered no other bodies. They made their way back downstairs into the home and saw that the back door had been left open, so it led police to believe that their suspects had escaped out through the back door. Now, police did decide to bring in search dogs to help during this, and when they had the search dogs, they gave the search dogs the scent, and the dogs immediately started running into the wooded area that was behind the home. Now, when police followed the dogs, they could see that there were pieces of body armor left out, seemed all scattered. It almost seemed like a trail leading to where their suspects were, because within about 10 minutes of police releasing the dogs had located both Robert and Michael in this wooded area behind the home. Now, Robert was wearing a black t-shirt with the body armor still on, and Robert was very much complying with police at the time. He was listening to their commands. However, Michael, the younger brother, did not do the same. He was not complying. He was not listening to police. And so ultimately, police released the dogs and the dogs ran towards Michael and bit him on his shoulder. It was after being attacked by the dogs that Michael began finally complying with police. The police ultimately went over to the boys, grabbed them both, put them in handcuffs, and walked them around the home to the police cars. Now, while the officer who was guiding Robert was walking with him back to the cop car, Robert turned to the police and told him that the murders were not like the movies, and they thought that it would be a lot easier to kill than it actually was. Now, before getting into the cop car, Robert looked at Michael and said, quote, "It's been a pleasure. I'm proud of what I've done," end quote. Now, once the police brought the boys to the station, they separated them into different rooms for their interviews. Now, when talking to Michael, Michael told police that Robert was the mastermind behind these murders. He claimed that Robert had been talking about the murders for a while. However, it wasn't until the past 2 months when they really started putting their plan into play. It was when Robert found out that he could legally purchase firearms in Oklahoma without a permit that things really started to accelerate in this plan. Michael also talked about what the original plan was supposed to be, the original plan that him and Robert had talked about, that they had come up with, and that plan was that they were going to murder every single person in their family that lived in that house, and then the following day, they were going to go on a mass killing spree, killing pretty much everyone that they could. Michael said that Robert had ordered ammunition online, and the ammunition was set to be delivered on July 23rd. And again, these murders happened on July 22nd. So Robert and Michael had decided that they were going to kill their family on the 22nd. And then the following day, when the ammunition arrived, they were going to go out and continue the rest of their murder spree. Michael said that after the murder of their family, they were planning on putting all of the bodies into one room. They were going to wait on the ammunition, and then they were going to go to the gun shop to pick up their guns and then begin the rest of their kills. And this plan of theirs was really tainted when Daniel called 911 and basically exposed Robert and Michael's plan. Michael continued on in his interview by saying that he did not anticipate how difficult it was going to be to actually commit a murder. He said that he and Robert both thought that they would just have to stab everyone one time and they would die. And during this interview, Michael also confirmed that the motivation for all of this was to become famous and quote unquote set a record. Now, it was during this interview, after Michael was saying all of these things, that he also told police that he wasn't as involved as they may have thought. He said that he did know about the murder and knew what Robert was planning on doing. However, he just waited for Robert to do it and waited for Robert to be done. Now, police did not believe this for a singular second. They knew that this was not the case. So now it was time for police to sit down with Robert and get his side of the story. Now, Robert's police interview has never been released to the public. However, what we know is that in the interview, Robert was very quick to brag to police about the murders. He was talking about what his plan was and how he wanted to be known in the same category as some of the most prolific serial killers. He also expressed that he had had thoughts of murdering his family starting when he was 13 years old. And again, when he actually committed these kills, he was 18 years old. Now, Robert expressed that he did not think murdering people was a bad thing. He didn't see killing as a bad thing. He thought that getting rid of people in society who were not contributing in any way was actually a positive thing. Now, he did confirm what police already knew, which was that Michael was involved in this and contributed just as much as Robert did. Now, with all of this new information, police then left the interview with Robert and then went and sat down with Michael a second time and confronted him with the information that Robert had given them, which was that Michael was involved. Now, when Michael heard all of this new information and what Robert was saying, his story did change a little bit. He now said that he did remember stabbing his mom, April. He claimed that he stabbed her only once. However, again, police did not believe this. And all police really needed to hear from Michael at this point was that he did stab someone. If they could hear and place him physically hurting someone who ended up dying, that was going to get police the first-degree murder charge on Michael that they needed. So with Michael telling police that he did stab his mom, April, and now April is dead, that gives him that first-degree murder charge. Now, at this point in the interview, Michael then went on to tell police about the series of events and the sequence of events that led up to the kills. Now, the day of July 22nd, 2015 started out as a very normal day for the Bever family. However, Robert and Michael knew that the night was going to be very, very different. Now, Michael said that the main reason they chose July 22nd as being the day that they were going to commit these murders was because the ammunition was coming in on July 23rd, and Robert and Michael were worried that if their parents saw that they were ordering all of this ammunition to the house, his parents were going to get suspicious and they were going to start asking questions. So when they saw that the ammunition was being delivered on the 23rd, that was enough for them to decide that July 22nd was going to be the night. That way, his parents wouldn't be able to see everything that was being delivered the following day. Now, in the hours leading up to the kills, Robert had written in his journal and said, quote, "My only fear is that I can't hold the knife steady enough," end quote. And then right before Michael and Robert made their first move, Michael disabled the home alarm system. Now, April and Crystal later that night were sitting on the couch watching TV as they typically did, and Michael went into the living room and asked Crystal to come and look at something that was in their room on the computer. Crystal agreed and walked into Michael and Robert's bedroom where she sat down in front of the computer, and when she did so, Robert came came up from behind her and slit her throat. Now, unlike what Robert and Michael initially thought, Crystal lived and began fighting back, screaming and yelling. And it was when the screaming and yelling took place that April heard this from the other room, and she came running into the bedroom and immediately saw what was happening. Now, when April ran into the room, the attention shifted from Crystal to April, and Robert and Michael immediately turned their attention to their mom and began attacking her. It was during this time that Crystal ran out of the bedroom and ran towards the front door, and she was actually able to get into the front walkway. She was able to run outside. However, she fell to the ground, but sadly, Robert then chased her and dragged her back inside of the house and left her to die in the front entryway, where police eventually discovered her and saved her. And I don't think I necessarily made that clear earlier. Crystal did survive the attacks, and she was able to give all of the information about everything that happened to the authorities. So she survived, and then 2-year-old Autumn survived as well. Now, when it came to the other children that were in the home, that was Daniel, Christopher, and Victoria, they all began hiding in bathrooms and they began locking the doors. And in order to get to them, Robert and Michael tricked their younger siblings. Michael would run up to the doors that his younger siblings were locking themselves in, and he would knock on the door and pretend that he needed to get safety from Robert. He would say things like, "Help me," or "Let me in, he's going to kill me." And when the younger siblings trusted their older brother and opened the door, they were met with both Michael and Robert, who ran into the room and began stabbing their younger siblings to death. Michael also admitted to police that when Daniel had called 911, the reason that the call had dropped so suddenly was because Michael was able to get a hold of Daniel. He took the phone out of his brother's hand and smashed it to the ground. Now, it actually took David, the father, quite a bit of time to wake up during all of this. The house was very large and David was upstairs sleeping. However, eventually he did wake up and he heard what was going on downstairs, and he ran downstairs immediately. Now, when he ran downstairs, he was met with both Robert and Michael, who began stabbing him to death. It was said that when David was first stabbed, he immediately fell to the ground, where Robert continued to stab him over and over and over again. Now, shortly after murdering David, Michael said that him and Robert heard police knock on the door when they arrived to the scene, and they knew that they immediately had to run. So they grabbed a bag and ran out of the house from the back door and into that wooded area where they were ultimately arrested. Now, both Robert and Michael were charged with 5 counts of first-degree murder and an additional count of assault and battery for the attack on their 13-year-old sister. Now, Michael was charged as an adult, even though he was only 16 years old at the time of his crime. And Robert, being 18 and legally an adult, he was actually eligible for the death penalty in this. But a big factor in all of this, and a big factor that the DA and the prosecution and really everyone was taking into consideration when it came to the trials of Robert and Michael, was Crystal, the 13-year-old sister who survived the attacks. The DA had spoken to Crystal many times and really gave her the opportunity to kind of figure out how she wanted to proceed and asked her what she wanted in regards to the legal proceedings against her brothers. And Crystal told the prosecution that she wanted the trial to be as quick and minimally invasive as possible. She did not want to have this be a long, drawn-out process or a long, drawn-out trial. And she said that she did just want her brothers to go to jail for the rest of their lives, never have to see them again. And along with that, she did not want Robert to have to get the death penalty. And a big reason for that was because the legal proceedings were going to be different if Robert was going to be going for the death penalty instead of just life in prison without parole. It was going to be a longer process. So because of this, the prosecution really took Crystal and what she wanted out of this and made sure that this process was as minimally invasive and as quick as possible. possible. Now, Robert ended up taking a guilty plea for 5 counts of first-degree murder and was sentenced to 5 life sentences without the possibility of parole. And it was because he pled guilty that he avoided the death penalty. Now, Michael, on the other hand, Michael's situation was different. Michael's attorney, which, by the way, both boys had 2 different attorneys, Michael's attorney tried to pull out all of these stops when it came to Michael. He tried to get Michael's confession thrown out when Michael first spoke to the police. He tried to get Michael to plead insanity. He tried to get Michael to be charged as a juvenile because, again, Michael was being charged as an adult in this. However, none of those things were working, and Michael's case ultimately went to trial because he pled not guilty. Michael's trial began on April 16th, 2018 and lasted until August 9th, 2018. And everyone on the prosecution side was really trying to avoid having to take Michael to trial at all costs. Everyone was trying to do everything they can and everything they could to get Michael to just plead guilty because they did not want this case to go to trial for no other reason than they didn't want to have Crystal testify, because prosecution knew that if this case went to trial, Crystal was a key witness and she needed to take the stand during this. And they were trying to do everything that they could to protect her. However, because Michael pled not guilty, the case ultimately went to trial and she did have to testify. Now, it was also during the trial that Robert took the stand as well. And his behavior was very off-putting during this trial. He was smiling and chuckling and giggling throughout some of the questions. And during the trial, Robert admitted that the plan was to murder every single person in the home, and that included 2-year-old Autumn. As I said, their 2-year-old sister also survived the attack, and according to Robert, he claimed that their plan was to decapitate their 2-year-old sister. However, they actually ended up forgetting that she was there. Robert said that by the time all the murders were done, they forgot Autumn was still there, so they just forgot to murder her. It was also during the trial that forensics confirmed that the blood that was found on the knife, one of the murder weapons that Michael was using, did in fact have April's blood on it. Michael's blood was also found on the knife handle, and on the blade, there was a mixture of Daniel's blood and Crystal's blood. So because of that, that was enough physical evidence to tie Michael to this case. Now, when the jury came back from their deliberations, it was said that the majority of them were sobbing at the things that they had seen, at the things that they had heard, how tragic everything was, how heavy and brutal this entire murder was. Everyone was just in disbelief that anyone could be capable of something like this, not only murdering their parents, but murdering their younger baby children, siblings in such a brutal and grotesque way. And luckily, the jury came back and found Michael guilty on all charges. And he was sentenced to 5 consecutive life sentences. So he got life in prison without parole as well. Now, currently, Michael and Robert are being held in separate prisons, both in Lexington, Oklahoma. And about a year after the murder, the Bever home ended up burning down from what was believed to be arson. But the city then bought the land and they opened a park where the home used to be called Reflection Park. This was really important to everyone because no one wanted to drive by that house and remember the travesty that had occurred, remembered how brutal everything was. They wanted to be able to drive by what used to be that home and see a place of beauty and see something beautiful being replaced there. And it was really important for everyone that all of the victims were honored. The entire Bever family, everyone that lost their lives that day were honored, and that something beautiful could come out of it, even though it will never ever bring back the victims or do any justice in regards to what had happened to them. It was just something beautiful to be put in place of something that was so horrible and devastating. And that, you guys, is the case of the Bever family. It is the case of the Broken Arrow murders. And I'm very curious to hear what you guys have to say about it. Do you believe that Robert should have gotten the death penalty? Do you believe that Michael should have gotten the death penalty. Do you believe that Michael was as equally as involved as Robert? Do you believe that Robert was telling the truth when he said that Michael was involved? I'm very curious to hear everything you have to say about this case. And with that being said, you guys, that is all for me today. Thank you guys so much for tuning in to another episode of Killer Instinct. Again, if you're new here, hi, my name is Savannah and I'm your host of Killer Instinct. Make sure you go ahead and hit that subscribe button. That way you never miss an episode. We post weekly here on the podcast every single Wednesday. You're not going to want to miss it. I will be back next week with a brand new case for you guys. And until then, stay safe. Bye, guys.